My name is Bob Perot, so very pleased to be with you on this rainy off and on Monday, perfect fall weather. Joining me via Zoom today, we've got the one and only Brian Turner, our reporter for Carleton Place and Perth. Brian, thank you so much for being with me today.
You're very welcome and good afternoon.
Well, I guess it was it last week that the Carleton Place All Candidates meeting took place?
Yeah, it happened on October the 6th at the Carleton Place Arena.
Okay, and we wanted to delve a little deeper into this. First, let's talk about the race here, Brian. I'm going to go over each one. There are three big races going on there, and you can comment as I read the name of candidates. For mayor, interesting race going on there for sure. Andreas Fustanelis, who I do believe is a local contractor, he is going to be, he's running for the first time, a new name on the ballot. Doug Black, who is the current mayor, and Edward Toby Randall, a current councillor, all running. We had them on for our Carleton Place mayoral candidates roundtable. You can listen to that at lanarkleadstoday.ca. But some interesting ideas being brought to the table, Brian.
Yes, indeed. And during the night, the All Candidates meeting was broken up into comments and questions to the council candidates. And then the second half of the evening was comments and questions to the mayor and deputy mayor candidates. It was a long evening. It ran 3 hours. Was very well moderated by someone you might know, Brian Perkin. And they handled a lot of questions. I think Brian got in 10 questions to council candidates and 9 to mayor and deputy mayor. And, of course, growth was one of the big issues, and affordable housing was the second big issue of the night.
So let's talk a little bit about the mayors before we get on to the deputy mayors. Well, actually, if they were in the same group, we'll also mention that running for deputy mayor, Sean Redman, who is the current deputy mayor, and Andrew Tennant, who is running as well. So tell us a little bit about this portion of the debate.
Well, for the mayors and deputy mayors, they were all given the chance to supply answers to the questions, whereas during council discussion, there was they would ask one question to 4 candidates at a time. So for the mayors and deputy mayors, the first thing they were asked is how they would advocate for their top priorities. Toby Randall talked about more money going to recreation and culture, focusing more on sports, improving communication between town hall and residents. Incumbent Mayor Doug Black talked about employment opportunities, looking for strong growth. I mean, there's a lot of room in Carleton Place and a lot of jobs, but we're talking about the types of jobs that would let you afford a house, so we're not talking about entry level. Andreas Fustanelis, yes, you could call him a contractor. A lot of people would call him a land developer. So he is kind of in a precarious position running for a mayor of a community. He wanted to see more affordable housing, and he wanted to see more involvement in the decision-making process from residents. And he wanted to see a trade school come back to Carleton Place. It's been a number of years since Algonquin College had a presence in Carleton Place. Deputy Mayor Sean Redman was, you know, talking about keeping up on our infrastructure work. With all this growth comes the need for an expanded water treatment plant, the need for expanded transportation corridors, and he also wanted to see employment lands expanded. And they mentioned more than once during the evening a 30-acre parcel just south of the corner of Highway 7 and Highway 29, so just south of the Kia dealership. There's a 30-acre parcel that lies within Carleton Place. They want to see that developed into employment land.
Very interesting, and we should also mention that Andrew Tennant, who's also running for deputy mayor, is a current councillor. So basically everyone around the horseshoe now is seeking re-election, just 2 people looking for promotions in Andrew Tennant and Toby Randall.
That's right. There's a total of 7 members around the horseshoe, mayor, deputy mayor, and 5 councillors, 13 running for council. And you're right. The incumbents, Linda Secaspina, Jeff Atkinson, and Wes Parsons are the incumbents that are running. They're all one-term councillors. Doug Black has probably the largest number of years. He served as a councillor from 1980 to 85, again from 2010 to 2014, and of course he's been the town's mayor since 2018.
Really interesting how the town continues to develop and expand. And you've got a lot of, for lack of a better term, new blood coming in there. Even, Andreas Fustinelis putting his name forward. And yes, you're right, a developer. I didn't mean contractor, developer for sure. But then as you go and you take a look around the people who are running for council, let's just go over them here quickly. Corey Earle, Aaron Nedbala, I think that's how you say it, I'm not sure.
Yep.
Todd Boyce, Paolo Villa, Francois Maltais, Jeff Atkinson, as you said, Sarah Kavanaugh, Mark Hinton, Wes Parsons, Tracy Quissa, John R. Edwards, and Dina Cumley. Now, as I look at those names, I mean, one jumps out to me right away, and that's Corey Earle, because he's certainly been in the public eye for a number of years with his work for People First Lanark and then People First Canada
as well. He certainly moved up the leadership scale there, starting off as just the chapter leader in a small area representing Carleton Place all the way up to the national level. And as he mentioned during his opening comments, he's had the opportunity to speak at the United Nations on the topics that he's been involved with as an activist for a number of years.
And it's really interesting because when you're electing a council, when you're looking at a mayor, you want someone who can be an overall good leader, who has their hand in a number of different issues and feels passionately about a number of things. Often they will focus on one or two, but you want them to be well-rounded. And then when you're looking at a council, it's really interesting and it's really good to get a wide variety of representation there. And certainly I don't mean to single out Mr. Earle, but certainly that's the type of thing that he would bring to the table. Are there any other names there that sort of jump out to you that would be able to do the same sort of thing?
Certainly, there's a lot. There was a lot of preparation for these candidates before they came to the meeting, and a lot of them bring a lot of community involvement history. People like Sarah Kavanaugh, and I'll have to correct the pronunciation of Dana Comley's name. They've been involved in multiple projects with the youth center. So has Paolo Villa. Dana has been involved with the BIA. She's a local business owner, a downtown business owner. She's been involved with a lot of the municipal committees, ones for the river corridor and urban forest committees, to name a few. Mark Hinton has had a long history with community involvement at community, committee levels. And of course, Wes Parsons, the incumbent. But no, the history, and Tracy Quissa has been an advocate and an activist for years on the topics of social justice and among other things. So there are no people that are popping up that have just, decided to throw their name in and have actually had no connection with the community. Even some of the people that are new to Carleton Place, like Todd Boyce, has only been here for 12 years. And Mark Hinton is a recent addition to the community. They got in feet first, got their feet wet, rolled up their sleeves, and found out where help was needed and readily volunteered. And that gets you a lot of respect, and I think it'll get you some votes.
Boy, I got to tell you, we're getting old, Brian. If 12 years is new to the community, no doubt about it. So tell us a little bit about this debate. What stood out for you? What are some of the notes you took on this?
Well, there were some unique things to Carleton Place's debate that you might not hear in other communities. There was a lot of discussion on the Ottawa Valley Recreational Trail. There's been a lot of discussion because it's a mixed-use trail that allows motorized vehicles as well as hikers and cyclists and even horse riders, that there's a lot of discussion on how to improve safety. And there was a lot of discussion on whether or not ATVs should have more access to town streets. Some people don't realize that in Ontario, if you're considered to be a rural municipality, think of places like Beckwith and Tay Valley, ATVs are allowed by default on all of your streets and all of your roads. If you don't want them there, you have to pass a bylaw. It's the exact opposite for urban municipalities like Carleton Place, Almont, Perth, Smith Falls. By default, they're not allowed on the street. And if you want to allow them, you have to pass a bylaw. Now, Carleton Place did just change the rules to allow ATVs on a very small section between the Ottawa Recreational Trail, the Ottawa Valley Recreational Trail, and one business on Town Line Road that sells fuel. So they don't really have a lot of access to the downtown. And there was a lot of debate whether that's that's the right way to do things. Sean Redman said it best. He said, if we allow snowmobiles on the street, and they are legally allowed on every street in Carleton Place, why don't we allow ATVs?
It's a very good question. It certainly is. And it's great when you're talking about municipalities like this, that these are the issues that people do care about. You know, you can think of it from both sides. Some people would be concerned about having the extra vehicles on the street and have safety concerns. But of course, the people who ride the ATVs, I know several of them, they're incredibly safe. And they, you know, obviously have a valid argument. They can point to those small communities that you're talking about as far as safety and experience riding goes.
And another topic that has not come up in my experience at past all candidates meetings, climate change. Definitely people are interested in protecting the environment and improving the environment. But the storms that we had here in this year, specifically the May storm that left a lot of our area without power for several days, was a topic of discussion. And, you know, what are the candidates' positions on improving the carbon footprint of Carleton Place? And applicants and candidates, whatever, talked about, you know, greening the municipal fleet, turning more and more vehicles to electric power only. When they talked about responses to severe storms, and I think everyone admits we're in for more of those than fewer ones in the future. They talked about improving communications because, of course, that May storm landed hard on a Friday night when the municipality was closed. Their phone systems went down with the power, and their computer systems went down. So there was a lot of blanks when it came to trying to get information, staff and or residents wanting to know what was going on. So there was a lot of talk about looking how that response happened and how it would be easy for municipalities and emergency response units to identify the most vulnerable people in a community and tailor their response to give them the most assistance.
Now, I do believe the storm hit on a Saturday night because I was at the trailer. Yeah, and, you know, we had to make it back here. Thankfully, we had power. But as you mentioned, people at Carleton Place didn't for a long time. And there was a lot of chatter about whether council and the mayor specifically acted appropriately. Did that come up at all?
No. Personal visitations out of town or trips didn't come up during the conversation, but all of the candidates pledged to improve communication and improve emergency power supply systems. I even put my own suggestion in, rather than looking at the extreme cost of getting into things like generators, why not look at Tesla power walls, those small batteries that can run a phone system and a computer system for days?
Yeah, for sure. And I know that the storm, much like the ice storm before it, has got people thinking in different directions, especially when you're looking at how the weather patterns have changed. I mean, we get tornado warnings and all that all along now, of course. On the topic of affordable housing, this one is one that really interests me. Did anybody talk about changing zoning bylaws like we've seen in Perth? And I know every time we speak to Terry Lee Kelford from Cornerstone Landing, she brings up the fact that they are working with communities, with municipalities, to try to allow tiny houses on existing lots. And that would certainly go a long way to providing some form of affordable housing. Where did they go with this particular part of the conversation?
Well, there was a lot of suggestions ranging from things like reducing the size and the cost of housing. And I've heard this at council meetings in Carleton Place before, specifically from Deputy Mayor Sean Redman, who works in the industry. He works at a large building supply center. And he said, you know, when you look, why do you have 10-foot ceilings and granite countertops and marble floors in housing developments that you are promoting as being affordable? He said, why can't we redesign and redesign by changing expectations and providing a very comfortable and very functional house that protects you and is efficient but doesn't necessarily have the luxury features? Of course, that takes a little bit of marketing. They talked about looking, I'm just going through my notes here, working with the county to work on affordability, increasing REPs, what they call rent supplements, which is a very popular way of assisting people trying to get into to rental housing. answer the question, just building more county social housing, not necessarily the answer because of the cost, like the new apartment building on Arthur Street that was just opened up this year, late albeit because of pandemic-related delays. It was a plus $20 million exercise, and no one's saying that it wasn't needed, but are there more economical ways to do it? Andrew Tennant, the candidate for deputy mayor, the challenger, he was talking about decreasing backyard space to improve more housing. Carlton Place does have the allowance for these secondary suites. But the one thing that kept coming up, at least from the experienced members in the candidate field, was that until the province changes their regulations, it's very hard to influence developers to include a percentage of their project as affordable. And then, of course, there's the debate as to what should be considered affordable in the first place. So I was impressed by Wes Parsons' move that we've covered a couple times on the news, where he's looking at making an application to the Ontario government to get what's called a minister's order to make inclusionary zoning the rule of the land in Carlton Place, not just a suggestion. And it has to go even farther. I've heard a lot of municipal representatives over the last few months state, until the province gets serious and changes the rules to give municipalities more power in dealing with developers and development projects, we're not going to see the targets that Premier Doug Ford set up during his June election. What was that, 150 million homes in 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand it, because I think personally, in my conversations with everybody who's weighed in on it, there's no doubt in my mind that if you put an apartment building into a town like Carlton Place, Smiths Falls, or Perth, that was filled with apartments that are two rooms plus a bathroom, or three rooms, or like two bedrooms, a common area, if you will, like your living, dining, kitchen area, and just keep them really basic. You don't go with the high-end finishes that you're talking about. Those things would go in a matter of days. They would be completely rented if they were affordable, and they still look nice and all that. That type of thing would go so quickly. I don't understand. To me, it's sort of a volume type situation that I think developers could certainly see something, do. I don't know. I just don't get it. Tiny homes, another one. I think that tiny home communities are something that can certainly be created, where you have a central area that would be a hall and maybe a large kitchen that people could convene. But then you have also your own tiny home where you have your own living space, your bedroom, your bathroom, and all that. Plus, we live in an area where you can have an outdoor space of your own three seasons out of the year, for the most part. Anyway, I'm digressing a little bit, but it's a conversation that I really... I really hope continues, because there's so many different options out there, but yet, Brian, we continually see the same type of solutions being thrown at it, and it's not working.
And there's a tightrope that has to be walked here, and that tightrope is infill housing. And we've seen examples of very controversial meetings where someone is proposing to take down a single-family home and put up a fourplex of townhouses or a sixplex, and gets a lot of pushback from the neighboring property owners because they feel it's not compatible with what's in the neighborhood. And the same thing is going to continue, and it'll probably get worse as we talk about 6- and 7-story and 8-story apartment buildings and large banks of townhomes. We're not talking on open area now. We're talking at infill. So, an old house is torn down or a vacant piece of property comes up for sale, and it seems to be a rush to see how much you can jam in there. And, of course, the big fear with a lot of municipalities is now there seems to be a new philosophy at Queen's Park. And that philosophy is build as many as you can, as fast as you can. And if the municipality turns down a developer and he decides to appeal that decision to what used to be called the Ontario Municipal Board, now called the Local Planning Appeal Tribunal, the municipality is going to lose.
Really interesting. So what are some of the thoughts that you heard? Was there anything sort of outside the box, or something that was, straying from this sort of mainstream thought on tackling affordable housing?
Well, that was the surprise. I didn't hear any conversation or any questions on how to make these developments compatible and how to work with existing neighbors. You know, we all talk about the need for affordable housing, but, you know, a lot of people that own their own homes and are longtime residents don't necessarily want to see affordable housing next door. So that's the thing when you have the issue that's first and foremost on a campaign trail, and these candidates, all especially the incumbents, know the people that come out and vote in numbers aren't necessarily in favor of large-scale affordable housing.
No, it's really interesting. It is. And I mean, there's people have so many different opposing views. And I think once this election is complete, we're going to see this really ramp up because we are looking at affordability, and not only Carleton Place, but Perth, Smiths Falls, Lanark Highlands, Tay Valley, Drummond North, Elmsley, you name it. They're all dealing with the same issues. They're all dealing with things are way too expensive. We get reports that natural gas is going up through the roof. Food prices. Oh, don't get me started. You know, it's this council, whoever becomes elected, is going to have to deal with this overarching, all encompassing issue of affordability. And it starts with a place to live. So really interesting times ahead, that's for sure.
And of course, inflation hasn't done this file any favors. You know, I've been monitoring and reporting on projects over the last, you know, since the pandemic started, and just watched with my jaw on the floor as these prices have gone through the roof. Now, industry experts will tell us, well, things are starting to relax a little bit, but that still means you're paying stupid prices for a sheet of plywood and a 2x4 compared to the way it was pre-pandemic. Yes, they have come down from their peak, but that applies to every dime the municipality spends on infrastructure. You know, the bridge project that's happening in Carleton Place and the Bridge Street's redesign and rehabilitation. It started off at a project well under $10 million several years ago in the planning stages. It's gone way beyond that now.
Certainly has. So any final notes you'd like to leave our listeners with? And actually, voting has started today in Carleton Place.
Yes,
so,
I did my voting online this morning.
Good for you.
From the comfort of my day office, and it was a very quick and easy procedure. And for those people who think maybe we've gone overboard on the coverage of municipal elections, remember this. In 2018, less than 40% of Ontarians voted in a municipal election. Some of our communities like Carleton Place, Smith Falls, and Mississippi Mills did much better, posting numbers over 50%. We had a community just to the outside of us at North Frontenac that got their council in with less than 5% of the vote. There is no reason to relax. A lot of this information is available online. If you go onto the municipal website for Carleton Place, you can get all the instructions. You can get a contact list up there that gives you email addresses and phone numbers. And I would just urge everyone to take a few minutes to look at some of the campaign platforms. There's a lot of good quality candidates running in Carleton Place. I certainly wouldn't want to run against any of them if I was doing that again. they're worth your time. We're not talking about spending hours and days researching this, but they're worth your time. Take the time, make the selection, and get online and vote.
There you go. Wise words from a... well, wise man, I'll give you that one today, okay, Brent?
And I was in contact with Town Clerk Stacey Blair today, who said they will be posting raw voting numbers on their website at the end of every day. So you can go and look and see how many people voted today and how many people will vote tomorrow and the next. And I think that's great, because if you see large numbers come out, maybe we've got the message through. Maybe people want change. It's usually when there's high numbers coming out to polls, it means people are ready for change and are pushing for change.
Yeah, absolutely. And Elections Canada and Elections Ontario, looking at these things very closely, as I was talking to Dave about this morning, they look at these municipal elections as testing grounds for voting methods, and they want to see how it works and see how secure it is, how reliable it is, too. So because they want to get the voting numbers up as well. And if you can have people voting from home or on their phone, wherever they are, and you can vote online on your phone, you know, wherever, if you can just make it as easy as possible for people to legally and securely vote, then I'm all for it, because it really does provide that voice and allows us to get an exact representation, or as close to as possible, of what the people actually want.
Indeed. And I can tell you that's the number one focus of every municipal clerk's office. And from my knowledge of all the clerks that I deal with in my job here, they are all extremely well qualified. And you can rest safe that your vote will be done safely and securely.
Excellent. Well, Brian, it's always a pleasure to speak with you about such things. And we appreciate going a little bit deeper in here. As people do begin voting in Carleton Place. And just to clarify there, when you say the raw voting numbers, you just mean the total, not the individual totals of who's voting for who.
Just,
we don't find that out.
Just the number of people who went online or used their phone to cast a ballot. So
yeah, you took me aback there just for a moment.
So if I can end with a quote from Mary Cook.
Absolutely.
Get out and vote.
There you go. Brian Turner joining us today. He is our Carleton Place and Perth reporter, and he attended that meeting last week that took place with the debates with the mayors, deputy mayors, and then all of the councillors. Brian, we'll be talking to you shortly, and no doubt you have a busy week ahead, and then the election will be coming up a week from tonight. We'll have you on our election night coverage.
Sounds good.
Brian Turner, our guest here on InFocus. My name is Bob Perreault. Thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful afternoon.